welcome to another exciting, riveting edition of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer. And yes, I have turned the tables on Sherry Coolidge, who normally walks us into this podcast. She's here. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
The reason I turned the tables is because I'm going to interview you in segment one of the podcast. And joining you, tell us who we have with you, Sherry.
Politics editor Carl Weiser. And you, anyone who's familiar with my reporting knows I pin anything you don't like on Carl.
On the boss, on the assignment editor. So as we record this, it is the morning after. That's a good song, Phil. We should drop that in. Da-na-na-na-na, the morning after.
There's got to be a morning after.
Of the election.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We
still have a special guest. All right, let's dispense with that because it's very important. Sherry, who is our special guest
this week? It's Police Chief Teresa Thiege. You know, it's been a while since we've caught up with her. She's a past podcast guest, but you know, she was really on my mind when we saw the 5-year-old in Winton Hills. He was killed in a drive-by shooting while he was asleep in his own bed. And it really made me think about all of the violence involving our teens, even though he was a victim of it. We've been writing a lot about violence amongst teens, and we are going to talk to her about that.
And she has made some headlines recently because she's been pretty outspoken on what she thinks needs to be done. It's not just a job for the police department. So we'll get into that with Chief Thiege, who's, what, coming up on 2 years at the helm? Is that right?
No, three.
3 years.
I know. Time flies
including,
when you're having fun.
Including interim chief,
say that.
Right? Including
yes.
Interim chief. All right. So let's get to the election. I would like to interview you and Carl right
okay.
now. Sherry, you've been covering politics for a long time. Carl has been in various roles in his career many times dealing with politics. Right now, he is in charge of the team that covers politics, growth and development, and other important topics for the Enquirer. So first off, and I'll throw this to Carl since you're our quasi-guest today.
I think
today.
We should say we're recording on the day after the election.
I did say that.
Oh, you did?
I did. Remember
right,
I sang the morning after?
And I think we should say on very little sleep.
Yes.
True.
In
3
fact,
hours.
In fact, you both made fun of me because I'm in my weekend attire, meaning like 2 hours of sleep. I didn't feel like putting on work clothes.
Yeah.
So I'm super cash today. Very much
I am
so.
Not, because you never know on a Wednesday when you're going to have to run over to City Hall, but I didn't have to do that, but
I've
I can't be casual.
I've never seen you super cash, Sherry.
It happens.
All right.
Well, I discovered the hard way that our newsroom does not have a good place to nap. So we need to consider adding a nap room.
But we have
no good comes from that, Carl.
Carl, we have those two like closet offices.
Yes, you have to.
There's couches. You could have slept on the yellow couch.
Oh, and look, as Phil has just pointed out, we have a very fancy pleather couch.
Checks out, Burl.
In the studio. All right. So first question, I'll throw it to Carl. You've been covering Cincinnati politics for a long time. What was one of the surprises for you last night, or maybe there weren't any?
Well, I think the biggest story, and I think for a lot of people this was a surprise, even nationally, is the sort of area man now a heartbeat away from the presidency. And that's J.D. Vance winning as Trump's running mate. And he was down in Mar-a-Lago joining Donald Trump at the victory announcement last night. So that is actually one of the biggest deals for Cincinnati. If we haven't had a president since Taft. So it's been a long time.
Been a long time.
So, and I'm not sure, you know, the polls were pretty iffy. I'm not sure a lot of folks expected that, but he is, he's got a 78-year-old president. So he's also the youngest, I think, vice president since Richard Nixon.
At 40 years old.
Yeah. So.
All right. Ohio man, a heartbeat away from the president. Sherry, what was one of your surprises? What happened that you didn't see coming?
I did think that Trump was going to win, but I'm very plugged in, and there's no poll I haven't read in the last month. So while I felt like there was an energy around Kamala over the last weekend, there's, of course, a huge energy when it all went down over the late summer with the switch from Biden to her. There's a little bit of a bump in energy over the weekend, but I did think that he was going to win, so that did not surprise me.
What about locally?
I thought Connie Pillich is a Democrat prosecutor, and she defeated Republican Melissa Powers, and she won with 51% of the vote.
So
Carl
close.
Can attest to, I thought she was going to win by more. Literally, it's written in our team's chat of my prediction. So I can't get away from that. But she did still win.
And our political reporter is actually working on a story right now. His name is Scott Wortman. We had chronicled how property levies had really struggled this year because of the rising assessments. So people are paying more taxes and they're fairly grumpy about it. It turns out that actually most of the property tax levies passed.
Who was it that pointed that out last night in the heat of battle, Carl?
I believe that was Pearl Love.
That was me. I was scrolling through the results looking to see, you know, if there was a levy that failed that was significant that would have meant, you know, hardship for a school district or a municipality. And guess what? I didn't see any that, you know, with unofficial results went down. There were a few that were close. But back to the prosecutor's race. So, yes, Sherry, you thought it was going to be a more definitive vote because how blue Hamblin County is right now. And you touched on this in your story with Kevin Grasha, who covered, you guys covered this race, and Kevin is our court reporter. You touched on the fact that the sample ballot for the Democrats was a key to victory for Connie Pillich. Explain.
So this county is just getting bluer and bluer as the years go by. And it's really like the past decade where we've just seen the courthouse has become much more Democrat. When I came here in 2002, I was the court reporter. I think every judge but like two were Republicans. And it is just not like that anymore. And now, was it 10 of the 11 county officials? Are Democrats. And it just has been this sea change. And I really chalk a lot of it up to the sample ballot. The Democrats had a huge ground game. They were at every polling station. The mailers that they sent out really just take this with you, vote it down. And they use that as kind of their mantra. And people do it.
One of the emails I received from a reader this morning touched on that, how well organized they were, not just with the sample ballots, but just getting out the vote, you know, knocking on doors. I thought it would be a close race, and I actually thought that Powers might have the edge just because of concerns with Pillich's experience. You know, she's not been a prosecutor. I thought wrongly that there might be some, I would say, independents, moderates in the county, not hardcore Democrats that would think a little bit of balance in the county would be a good thing. And so now we only have one elected official.
There were, though, because most of the Democrats won by at least 10 points, if not more. And she won by two. So
there was a little bit of that, but not enough.
There was some crossing over, yes, because, you know, the sheriff race was a blowout.
Yeah, that's where we saw that people really were still thinking that. Just not enough people. I'm sure she's thinking today. But people were definitely thinking that.
And now we have a great political trivia question. Who is the only Republican in a leadership position in Hamilton County? Carl,
we know that it would be the county engineer.
The county engineer who ran unopposed.
Because it's the podcast, I'm just really going to throw out this fact that I only heard as a rumor. Apparently,
what the podcast? We don't have standards on this podcast, Sherry.
Apparently,
cover your ears.
You
Carl.
Have to have three certifications to be the county engineer, and that has narrowed the pool significantly. There's like 10 people in the county with enough certifications to run, and if you have all three certifications, or it might be two, that's really, it's very high bar. And if you can get all of those things and you have all of those things, you go work for like a development company and make a lot of money. And so that is not the case of the county engineer. There's other, you know, there's trade-offs there, your work day, pension, and there's things that are benefits to being the county engineer. You have to be dedicated to service, though, to give up, you know, these lucrative careers. And so there's not a line to be the county engineer. It's not a long line.
And it's not a very, I would say, glamorous political position. It is a job.
Yeah,
you know, think like dog catcher. Not to diminish it,
but honestly, it's more serious.
It's a very functional.
Yeah. It is landslides, the most dangerous intersections. Like it's fixing roads. Actually, it's like a really important job. It's kind of like quietly done, but it is not glamorous.
Oh, sounds like a story for Scott Wortman.
He's welcome. Everyone in the room knows I will assign stories to other people just by saying them out loud.
So as we wrap up, anybody who really cares about local politics knows the results. But what
I do want to make a point that I was in my research today. I think this is very interesting. A lot of people are talking about the Sherrod Brown loss, and that has surprised people. But the statewides are Republican, and that's only become more Republican as time has gone on. So it wasn't really a huge surprise to me. But Sherrod Brown is a very popular candidate, and he lost. And anti-gerrymandering issue one also lost. And so I've heard, in passing several times today, Cuyahoga County didn't have the turnout that people expected. And they're very important because they're the largest Democrat city in the state. That's important to turnout. So here are our turnout numbers, them compared to us, which I did think was interesting because they are both down compared to 2020. If you look at us, our turnout...
You mean Hamilton County?
In Hamilton County was 67.17% turnout, which is high, and people were very happy about that. But if you go back to 2020, it was 72.44%. So we were lower with that 5-point spread there. If you look at Cuyahoga County, their 2020 number, they had a 71% turnout, less than us. So they are not big turnout. They're not that. Those are big numbers, but it's not like they always surpass everyone by gobs. So 71%. Their turnout this time was 64%. So that is a bigger spread than we had, the bigger drop than we had. And so people really didn't turn out in Cuyahoga. So that's a very true narrative. If you hear people talking about it, like the numbers really back that up.
We'll have to see if it was a factor. There was a close race, but that's still a lot of votes for one county to come up with. I'm guessing.
If you want a Democratic issue or a Democratic candidate to win statewide, you have to have every voter in Hamilton County, Franklin County, and Cuyahoga County. There are no votes to be lost, and you get a backup from Canton and Akron. But otherwise, the rest of the state is, for the most part, Republican. You need every vote. There is no margin of error.
So obviously a big race because that contributed to the shift, the balance of power in the Senate. Ohio and West Virginia converted from a Democrat senator to a Republican last night. Speaking of county vote totals, it was interesting in the Supreme Court justice race that Joe Dieters was in. He won the state, but lost his home county, Carl.
Yes, that was, again, I think this is a result of the bluing of Hamilton County, and it's a sort of extraordinary because the Dieters name used to be magic here. It used to be Garrett, even when I think it was his brother was on the county commission.
He was.
Yeah, so you could be a Dieters, and that was an automatic entree to office. And, Joe Dieters did not need Hamilton County to win statewide.
Although, to be fair, I think Dennis Dieters did eventually lose. That's how Alicia got her seat. But no one is going to beat Alicia. That's just the thing in Hamilton County.
But Joe Dieters is going to be just fine. He won his term on the Supreme Court after being appointed by Governor Mike DeWine.
So he actually won a different judgeship. Yep. He ran for a different seat, so he has a 6-year term. Otherwise, he might not have been able to run for re-election to his current seat. And so he has 6 more years. And Governor DeWine will be able to appoint to Joe's vacated
political
seat.
Maneuvering at his best. Because really, if he would have lost, it gives him another opportunity to run in the seat that he was appointed to. This locks him in there for 6 years now. You get another DeWine appointment. And you have Republicans maintaining some control of the state Supreme Court.
There's only one DeWine appointment that matters.
What do you mean by that, Sherry?
Who gets J.D. Vance's seat?
Well, what a perfect segue. So let's look ahead. What is before us still now that the dust has settled a little bit from the election? That's a big one. Any names?
John Houston. If it's not him, that's where I would be shocked.
For those without a scorecard, that's our current lieutenant governor.
Yes. Who really is in line to be the governor.
That's what I was going to say. Hasn't he been posturing to be the next governor?
You can run for governor or you could be appointed a senator. There's only 100 of them, Viral.
There's a lot of, the problem is for the Republicans, there's a lot of, a couple other Republicans who are posturing to be governor, and this clears out a primary. If Dave Yost, you know, Dave Yost wants to be governor. So a couple other people want to be governor. So this clears out one guy, if it is indeed Houston, to make for a less messy Republican primary.
Fascinating. All right. Well, Carl, I know
as always, the election isn't over.
Carl, this is my story of my life. I try to wrap it up. I try
like to
bring
talk.
It in.
I know.
And
I Sherry's like, we long.
All right.
The election
Sherry.
Is not over on election day for us. It's really only getting started.
You're absolutely right. So, Carl, thank you for joining us the day after election. I know, you know, like many of us, you haven't had much sleep. You got meetings today. So we will let you go. And Sherry, I mean, with your permission, is it time for our special guest?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Special guest time here on That So Cincinnati. I'm here today. I'm happy to welcome Police Chief Teresa Thiechi. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we like to have you on from time to time, but it's been a minute because why? You're so busy.
A few things going on.
You're so busy, but we thought we'd kind of do like a catch up on how things are going. It's almost your 2-year real anniversary of being named chief. Time has flown by. I'm pretty sure we were just standing outside City Hall after your swearing in. Yes?
It really has gone quickly.
And so let's actually start out with what's your biggest surprise? Like, ooh. I mean, I feel like you kind of knew going in.
Yeah. What's my biggest surprise? I think it was something that Chief Isaac had told me one time that I'm really starting to understand what he was saying, is what people want most from me as the chief is my time.
They like to be heard.
Yes.
You know, and yes. I say that to the council members, like I try to explain like what public comment is still, they just want to be heard.
That's right. And people have been so unbelievably kind to me since I got the job that I have a very hard time saying no to anybody when they want to see me or want me somewhere where they're going to be. So it's very hard for me to say no.
Do you find that people are interacting with you differently because you're our first female chief? Do people see you in the dual roles as a woman and the chief?
I don't see that they interact with me differently. What I do get frequently is women in places that will say to me how important it is to them that we have a female chief. I will have women's organizations who would like me to come and speak with them, things like that. But I don't think that they see me differently than any previous chief, and I don't think they see the efforts of the police department any differently because it's being led by a female versus a male.
Oh, no, I see that. There's nothing different. Like, it's still the same.
Yeah, same police department.
How are things going over there? We did just see council over the summer set aside money for 2 police recruit classes. I know how difficult it is finding the best officers. How is that going?
Yeah, so we just started the 116th recruit class this past Monday. So they are still deer in the headlight kind of look in their faces. We are putting everything we've got into recruiting efforts to try to fill these classes because you're right. City Hall has told me, keep hiring, keep hiring, keep hiring, keep hiring. And, you know, unlike when I came on, the candidates came to us. We didn't have to look hard for them. It's different now. They're not coming to us. We have to go find them. And so I have a great group of people that are doing that. We're offering all kind of incentives, you know, to join the recruit class. There's an incentive. If you're a city employee, any department, if you're a city employee and you refer somebody, you can get up to $1,000 bonus.
Wow.
For referring somebody. So we're doing a lot in the recruiting realm.
Because it is rigorous. It's not just wanting to do it. It takes a very special person, especially in Cincinnati, because we have all of these very important tenets in the collaborative.
Correct.
About really the helpful policing part of things.
Yeah, you're right. It's it's a daunting profession for sure, but it's also extremely rewarding profession. I don't know any other job that somebody could get into where they feel like they could make an impact in their city like they could as a police officer. And I'm talking from the newest graduated recruit to the highest ranking people in our department. They all make an impact every single day.
It does, we'll kind of jump right into it. It does seem like last week was a very tough week, or 2 weeks ago, probably when this publishes. We had a five-year-old who was killed while he was sleeping in his bed in a drive-by shooting. And then we had the deaths in College Hill. And you were at both of those, right?
Yeah, I was at the one in College Hill. The other one was I was made aware of very early in the morning. You're right. So that was a week ago today. It was last Thursday. You know, that 6:30 call that you get is nothing. Nobody's calling me at 6:30 in the morning to give me good news. So when my phone rings or my text messages go off in the middle of the night.
Not as bad as the news you get, but it usually is you have to do a story.
Yeah, usually it's not good news. So we started that day with a five-year-old. Heartbreaking for the family, heartbreaking for the community. And it's heartbreaking for the responding officers and firefighters as well that went to that scene. And then just a couple hours later, we were in College Hill for that triple homicide, which was just
beloved member of the community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What Ms. McCollum has done for this community, you know, she absolutely did not deserve what she got that day. When I was there, we had all of our resources there, and they performed admirably. Our SWAT team, our District 3 personnel, our CIS personnel, the fire department, it was all hands on deck up there, and they performed extremely well for hours long incident.
And knowing, and so many people knew her, and even if they didn't know her themselves, they knew someone who knew her. So many people in City Hall knew her as a beloved member of our community. Like, our reporter covering it knew her. It was a hard day.
Yeah, she has touched a lot of lives in this city, and you know, through her fostering children's program, and you know, it's just a big loss for the city.
So no, any news on our five-year-old?
No, CIS is still working the case.
Okay.
You know, the leads, we're always asking the community for any leads that they can give us. They can call our homicide unit. They can always call Crime Stoppers. They're a tremendous partner. And so, you know, anything that they have, we would be happy to take that information.
I mean, somebody knows, and they have to bring comfort to this family and let justice be done.
Absolutely, somebody knows.
You did just announce yesterday, a cold case squad. I feel like you guys have been doing this work for a long time anyway, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So this came to fruition through a conversation with myself and Prosecutor Melissa Powers. The number of cold cases that we have in this city, roughly somewhere between 400 to 500, but if you go back to the 1940s, and there is so much nowadays in technology and strategies and forensics that was not in existence back then, even back in the 80s. And so we decided to pull our resources together along with our partners with the ATF, with the coroner's office. Crime Stoppers is a part of this, and just see what we could do to solve some of these cases. You know, we have extremely smart, experienced investigators in our homicide unit that are going to be working these. The prosecutor's office is dedicating a couple of retired Cincinnati homicide investigators who now work at the prosecutor's office are going to join us and help us there. And so hopefully we will solve a couple of these homicides for the families.
I know, and for the families, but also the community, because they've done some very bad things.
Yeah.
And we don't want them to do bad things anymore.
You're absolutely right. So if somebody is not held accountable for a homicide, they may very well be still out on our city streets. That's an excellent point. And so if somebody out there knows something about any one of these old cases, just give us a call again through Crime Stoppers.
Do you? I used to feel like, because I covered police a long time ago in a quasi way, like through Courtroom A, mm-hmm. and courts, I used to hear about Crime Stoppers all the time. Am I just not seeing it now because I'm not as close because I cover City Hall? I just don't hear a lot about Crime Stoppers.
Yeah, they're still out there, and I don't want to date myself, but you're really making me think back when you said Room A. That was something we used to do when I was a young officer.
That's where the arraignments are. And every TV station and us used to cover it. We just go now for the big cases, but yeah. I would go there like every single day, and there would be so like, oh, there's a Cincinnati Bengal. Oh, there, like you would, that's where you would, because you hear about the big crimes overnight.
Right.
But the police sheets say who the people are. And I think we got a lot more out of doing that because you would see like teachers and like it's the who sometimes really mattered.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we used to, as young officers, we used to go down to Room A for mm-hmm. that initial arraignment. And now we have a process in lieu of that. So.
Judge Betsy Sunderman, when I did it, was the prosecutor in Room A. Now she's a judge. Yes. Like, yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, I'm sorry, where were we on that question, Jerry?
So I'm hearing crimes. I don't feel like I hear as much about Crime Stoppers.
Yeah. So it is absolutely still extremely active organization, one of our best partners. And, you know, through the leadership of Gene Ferrara, I've been to their meetings, and they recently had their annual Crime Stoppers breakfast. And he reports out all of the spending, the tips that are paid out, and the crimes that are solved. And they are still extremely active in this region.
Okay. So that helps. Helps.
Absolutely.
Because it's anonymous, right? And then there's some incentive to help out.
Yeah. And on top of the Crime Stoppers incentive for these cold cases, the ATF is offering up rewards as well. So if somebody has a tip on a cold case, they could get a reward from Crime Stoppers and the ATF.
I mean, that's very real money. And these very tips do get paid out. So that is a good reminder.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about cold cases, we probably should talk about, I'm looking it up right now.
You could say any case right now. Like we're on the edge of our seat.
No. We had a story from Cam Knight, who you guys know very well. Mm-hmm. He's one of our main public safety reporters. The Council, I had to look it up because I wanted to get this right. The Council of State Governments Justice Center report that evaluates the number or the percentage of unsolved cases. You guys came out really strong in that report. Ohio, 7 of 10 violent crimes go unsolved. And in Cincinnati, your solve rate is what, closer to?
About 70%. 70%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that, what's behind that? What is CPD doing differently than other departments in the state?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things. And before I get into those, so we are at a hover around 70% right now. National average is about 52. But one of the things that the caveat that I always like to add to this is for us, for Cincinnati Police Department, our closure rate is based on a tighter parameter of what a closure is. So we want the arrest of the offender, or if we know the offender has died, we consider that closure. Some cities, if they know who did it, but they can't charge them, can't prove it and get them in court, they count that as a closure.
That's not enough.
We do not. We count it as a closure once we've made the arrest. So our parameters are tighter as well. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that I attribute that to really is actually two things. One is the community's assistance in these cases. You know, when somebody loses a loved one, they are more apt to give us assistance than if they have a loved one who's shot and survives. They sometimes don't want to work with us. But a homicide victim's family is more apt to work with the police department. And it's also, I believe, the skill set of our homicide investigators. They are so good at what they do. And they embrace the technology. You know, we have the existence of the Crime Gun Intelligence Center that helps solve homicides. So it's the way we use our resources and the skill set of those individual detectives in our homicide unit.
We should also talk about, I think, what if people knew, hey, you guys are interviewing the police chief, what's going on with youth on youth crime? And so, just to remind our listeners, a couple years ago, we did a pretty significant special report because youth on youth violence, specifically shootings and deaths, was at an all-time high. In the last 2 years, we've seen that number drop dramatically as far as homicides, but there's still the number of what I would classify juvenile crimes is still something that I think is a challenge for the city. So, from your perspective, what are you seeing? What do you hear from citizens that voice concerns? What's the feeling of the officers on the streets? Do they feel that they have, I'm asking this big loaded question, but do they feel supported? If they make arrests, do they feel like it's worthwhile, or do they feel that, the burden of the court is such that it's just going to keep perpetuating?
Yeah. So I think the when you talk about this topic, there are so many different aspects of how we approach this, from simply the Cincinnati Police Department's approach to this. Our officers are frustrated. They're very frustrated, arresting some of the same kids over and over again. Just the behavior of some of the kids, even if they don't arrest them, just the disorder that they bring to particular areas of our city, particular times of the day.
And Government we have to, Square, the Transit Center in Oakley.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So the officers are getting very frustrated because nobody is managing these kids other than us. I've said it before, there are some times with these groups of youth that I feel like the officers have become glorified babysitters, and that is not what they are trained to do. They are trained to deal with more serious things for our city, but we are the resource that is available right now. That doesn't mean that the city administration isn't doing everything they can right now to help alleviate that burden on us. They are working with the school system. They are working with JFS. They are working with independent partners to try to get somebody out there to deal frontline with these kids before the officers have to deal with them.
So you don't have to say this, but I'm going to say it because I've heard this repeatedly in City Hall. There is a frustration that between the City Hall and the schools about who should be doing what. There is a very, very real frustration. We've written a lot of stories about that, but I'm not going to.
You're right.
You don't have to go there. I'll go there.
That is a real frustration, though. You're accurate. You're accurate in that account.
Let me ask you this, because this came up in passing to me. Many cities, because we have a lot of problems at Government Square and at the Transit Center, and the city just in a big carryover spending bill put money
towards. You could add the banks to that.
And the banks. So the city has just put some resources into that, and that's great. But some cities have metro police, like police officers as part of the busing system. Do we need something like that? It's a hot seat question, I know.
But yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. I do not think in the city of Cincinnati we need something like that. I know exactly what you're talking about. Some subway systems in larger cities have their own police department. Because of the scale of our public transit system here, I think it's better served by Cincinnati Police working with them. Our Queen City Metro does have an off-duty detail of Cincinnati police officers, and it's very robust. They too, put a lot of money towards hiring us on an off-duty capacity to ensure the safety of their riders and their locations. So, and I think that is a plausible solution, just to keep it that way. I don't think we need any kind of transit.
Okay.
Place.
Has that been going on a while, or is this something?
Yeah, Metro
ramped up.
Metro has had an off-duty detail with us for many, many years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why do you think that the crime is festering around those areas?
I think it's because of the busing system bringing so many youth from so many different areas into one location before the expectation is that they get on another bus and go home. I think that is probably one of the biggest problems to what we're seeing at Government Square and Oakley Transit Center right now. It's just the busing system that brings all those kids there at one time when the school lets out.
Which is a pretty unique situation if you look at other school districts in the county.
Well, they have their own busing systems.
They have their own buses, and they have many routes. And so a kid goes from school to basically, at the most, a 3-block walk from their home, where the situation in CPD is such, or CPS is such that you have every student who is taking the bus goes to a transfer station. And that's concentrating kids with a lot of free time.
So this is interesting because the city is putting a ton of money into efforts around fixing the problem at the transit centers. Would the money be better spent on giving it to the schools for busing systems?
It's been my experience. I think it's better at this moment in the city's hands because we see what's going on there and we can then have a bit more control over what the solution is.
Do you think we're getting closer to it? You know, it has tamped down a little bit. Yeah,
I think...
Certainly a government square.
Right. It has tamped down, but... Is that because we've got so many police there every single day?
It does seem so, yes.
You know, if you...
And is that sustainable?
Exactly. And you think about which officers we have there. Not individuals, but the group. It's our civil disturbance response team and our SWAT team. This is not what they were designed to do. You know, our civil disturbance response team was designed for... protests that get out of hand, not unruly kids. But that is the only resource we have right now to put towards the solution for this. When I think of this and when I talk to people about this problem, I kind of put it in solutions in two buckets. One is an immediate solution. That's what my concern is right now. What is the immediate solution that can help the police? And then obviously there are long-term solutions, some that are going to take probably 10 plus years, you know, fixing what may be wrong at JFS, DYS, things like that. But I don't have time for the long-term solutions. My cops are interested in the immediate solution.
It's like writing stories, Burl. It's the daily stories. And then we'll deal with the bigger stories. Like if there's daily stories, you have to do them right now.
That's a good analogy. So you kind of touched on this. Officers arresting the same kids over and over again. What's, from your perspective, are you getting enough support from the juvenile court system?
Yeah, so when this first came up, this issue really, we started working on this back in January of this year. That's when it was really at the height of the problem for us. We were not getting what I had hoped from juvenile court, but we've opened conversations with them. It is a little better there now, but part of that, I think, too, is because I now have an officer at juvenile court at the bond hearings every morning to give the magistrate and the judges true facts on what happened and not just a narrative on a piece of paper. So they are seeing a little bit more about the kids' history, what they did that brought them to the court system that day. And I think we're making some headway there. But again, part of that is because we put additional police resources towards it.
Guess what else will help, Burl?
What's that?
The Inquirer won a lawsuit from the Ohio Supreme Court, making juvenile court records much more transparent than they had been interpreted, because we would very much like to be covering these cases once they happen and talk about what happens. We don't know. Some of the cases were so non-transparent. Were the kids getting out? What was happening to them? Following and keeping eyes on things on our part is very important to us. So we really did just win a huge case for that.
Well, it'll be easier for us to... What I'm always interested in is kind of following the path on some cases that might shed some light on what's going on, you know, systemically. So you arrest a 15-year-old for the seventh time, and this time they're not being sent back on the streets. You know, what happens next? Who's assigned these cases from a social worker standpoint? You know, where's the breakdown happening? I mean, obviously it starts because these kids don't have a lot of support often, in terms of family support. And so, how do you break that cycle where you don't have an overwhelmed court system that is, it seems like maybe the threshold is pretty high to actually put someone in the system right now, just because of the resources and the number of kids that are showing up in court.
And the justice philosophy.
Well, we can get into that too.
Yeah, I think
so. You say things are better. It sounds like you're being a little diplomatic.
Yeah.
If just speaking frankly, and you've been a police officer for a long time, has something changed? What would your diagnosis be?
Yeah, I think if I went back early on in my career, we were not having juveniles accused of the seriousness of the crimes that they are now. It is night and day. I think our juvenile system was designed for rehabilitation for people with much minor offenses than what they're being charged with now. And so it's going to take the court system, the juvenile court system, a while to catch up to the types of crimes that the youth may be committing and to realize that rehabilitation isn't always the answer when they're committing serious crimes. So I think it's going to take a while for that to occur, because this is, you know, what they're seeing, what law enforcement is bringing to the juvenile court system nowadays is something that they really had not seen.
It's not shoplifting.
No, it's not shoplifting. We're bringing kids who are stealing firearms, kids who are shooting people, kids who have committed homicides. You know, my opinion, rehabilitation is not the answer when they've getting that far down that bad road.
Yeah. Well, that's sad to think about.
It is. These are kids.
Yeah.
These are kids. I mean, I've raised four of them. I know what they need sometimes is discipline at home, you know, to keep them out of this type of life. So.
Not always happening. That's true. It's hard, though.
It is hard.
So you can't tell someone, you can't go into family lives and say, this is how it needs to be.
I can't tell somebody how to parent, but I can hold their kids accountable when they've broken the law.
We have reported from time to time on the concerns of business owners downtown, particularly the banks. It seems that that's gotten a little better, that I'm not hearing as many, you know, complaints coming up from, you know, people downtown. People seem to feel safe. What role has the police department had in that particular issue that we were seeing, you know, earlier this summer, the previous summer, mm-hmm. Around the banks, around the central business district? Have you concentrated more officers in those areas, or is it, you know, have they gone elsewhere, or, you know, what's your thoughts there?
Yeah. So you're right. Let me just say first, downtown Cincinnati is safe. I bring my family downtown all the time. My kids, my grandkids come downtown all the time. It is very, very safe. I think our weekend of Blink is a perfect example of that.
There were no problems at Blink.
None at all. However, we do have crime that occurs. And I think it's incumbent upon people to be aware of their surroundings, be responsible for a bit of their own safety. But to answer your question, Burl, part of what is causing it to feel more safe is, again, police resources. You know, the same group of CDRT and SWAT that we have at the transit centers after school during the week for the kids, we also have in places like the banks, Main Street, and other locations on Friday nights and Saturday nights to make that group of individuals in the entertainment areas feel safe. It's a balancing act, though. You don't want to have too much of a police presence that people think, I'm not going to go there if it needs that much police to be safe. But you don't want too few either, that they can't handle something that may spring up while they're down there. So it's a balancing act, but we have very, very good commanders making very good decisions on what is the right number of police resources to deploy. And quite often I will follow their lead because they're the ones who are out there, see it on Fridays and Saturday nights.
Do we have a new assistant chief? So one of our assistant chiefs just went to Austin.
Yeah, and Lisa Davis got the chief's job in Austin, Texas. That's correct. I have two.
As it should be. These cities around the country are looking at Cincinnati Police, and they're saying they're doing something right, and then who are the number twos that can come be our number ones?
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah, I think I could name probably five assistant chiefs during my career that have become chiefs in other cities. So it is a place where other cities will look.
We miss Paul Newdegate. Shout out.
Virginia Beach.
You know,
Virginia
I don't really miss him that much because my parents live in Virginia Beach. And when I visit them, I pick up the paper, you know, the Virginian Pilot.
There he is quoted.
And there's usually a story where he's quoted.
I believe that about him. Yeah,
I'm like, where am I again? And by the way, you know who their city manager is?
I do.
Patrick Dehaney.
Dehaney. So it's sort of like Cincinnati South there in Virginia Beach.
Yeah. So I just went to Major City Chiefs Conference in Boston 2 weeks ago, and sitting at the table for representing Major City Chiefs was Paul Newdegate and Lisa Davis and myself. So we had three of us at the table.
Did you take a picture?
We did not. I think we have a group photo, but not. We did not get the three of us.
Did you bring him some Skyline or something?
No.
Next year.
Yeah. I see him usually twice a year at these conferences.
That's fun.
So it's always good to see Paul.
But. So do we have a new assistant chief?
So we do not have a new one yet.
Okay.
I have two vacancies. Oh. And so I believe next week we start the first interviews.
Okay.
They're kind of sprinkled throughout the month of November. And hopefully maybe by the end of the year, we will have two new assistant chiefs.
Okay.
So speaking of staffing, recruiting, you know, having enough officers is, I guess, a continual challenge.
Yeah.
How is staffing now? Where are you with recruiting?
Yeah, so we are still short, approximately 150.
And
officers.
Give me the context. Fully, according to budget.
Yeah.
How many officers, or how large is
our
the department?
Our authorized complement is 1,059.
I love this government speak. The authorized complement.
I know.
You know, as an editor, we have reporters that like. You guys brainwash them, and they think that's normal language.
Yeah.
And we have to like clean that out of the cop. Yes,
the authorized number. Of
yes,
officers.
Yes,
so
yes.
1,059. We and it's very ebbs and flows because we will have a class that will graduate. They hit the streets, and then retirements will start coming in. So you know we'll net 45 or 50, and then I'll have, you know, a couple dozen retire, and we'll have another class. So it's constantly changing the complement.
I feel like the raises are going to slow down some retirements. There was some pretty significant needed raises.
Glad you brought that up.
Significant raises to really match what's going on in the suburban departments that have a lot more money than us to kind of play around with and to keep officers.
Yeah.
But pensions are based on a person's top 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it did occur to me that people are probably going to want to stay three more years under the new pay structure.
Yeah.
But that gives a more balance, I think, of experienced officers to a lot of the younger. Mm-hmm. We've had these two classes for several years, mm-hmm. and so it'll keep some experienced officers, and which we learn from experienced reporters. That's how it works.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the wages because I'm thrilled for our officers with the outcome of their contract negotiations. They deserve every penny that they earn. So I'm really glad that the FOP and the city came to such a lucrative agreement for the officers. But you're right. Hopefully it keeps some of our experienced officers around. Hopefully it incentivizes people to apply to come and join us because they will make good money. It's a great place to work. It's a great city to represent. I'm happy to. We are, like I said, started the 116th class this Monday, and next week we are testing for the 117th class.
It has to move quickly.
It's constant.
Yeah.
How are things going without District 5, like headquarters, the District 5 headquarters?
Yeah. So when we closed the doors of District 5, it was November 12th of 2023, so we'll be coming up on a year here shortly, and 90 days after we closed the doors, we reported out that the response time for calls for service did not increase. Actually, it decreased slightly, and then we knew going into the summer months, anything could happen, and so now that we are coming upon a one-year anniversary of closing that, we will look at the numbers again. The biggest concern I heard from the citizens when we announced that we were going to be closing it was response time.
And what part of town are we talking about for those who don't remember what District 5 was?
District 5, Winton Terrace, Spring Grove, College Hill,
it was in College Hill in a big plaza that was not sufficing as any sort of headquarters.
Yeah, it was a temporary home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but the other four districts have absolutely picked up
they kind of have, do the officers have homes in the other places? Do they have a home somewhere?
Like a district, a building you talk? No, because, you know, that was a big concern again when we announced that we were going to be closing it. And my message to everybody was, once they do their roll call in the districts at their start of their shift, they then go out into the field. They can conduct their daily business out in the field without having to go back. So
from the car.
From the car. The there's so much technology in the car nowadays. Yeah. They can
do
everything.
Have you looked inside a police car lately?
I have. I have seen it.
I remember my ride along a few years ago as part of Leadership Cincinnati, and it is a mobile office.
Oh,
I mean,
it is.
I don't know how, you know, you keep your eyes on the line. You don't. Obviously,
we
you're
keep
not
our
operating
eyes on the
all
road,
of that
girl.
Stuff. But I would be. I mean, most average drivers are tempted by their cell phone. When
right.
you have like. An
computer
entire
screen.
Like yeah, yeah. It's amazing what's
you
in those
how
cruisers
to
today.
Like you're listening, and then your eyes are on the road.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely learn to multitask as an officer. That's for sure. But you know, it's interesting. We put so much technology in our cars nowadays. The technology costs almost as much as the car.
I'm not surprised to hear that. Yeah. Not in the least.
But. I mean, the theory here is there's no news in the office. There's news out there. Like we need to be out there, and there's no crime happening in the district headquarters. It's somewhere else, and you'll be closer if you're in your car.
They've adapted extremely well.
Well. Can you see us ever getting a new district headquarters?
You know, every once in a while I hear a little chatter about that. You know, we've got FC in our backyard, and that living arrangement, us in the front yard, them in the backyard, has worked out better than I thought it would. But I also know there are big hopes and big dreams for that area.
Yes.
Future development in that area would make our job very difficult. If we were surrounded
with the CET
by development.
Building. We don't know what it is. It's right, you know, kind of like across the street, basically. And more development coming north of the stadium.
Well, and despite the history of that building... And, you know, how it just, you know, feels like the police headquarters. It's stated, you know, it's been around a long time. I wouldn't call it state of the art at all.
No, it's through the years.
So it wouldn't be
years,
a bad thing, I guess, is what I'm leaning towards.
No, it wouldn't be a bad thing. Through the years, it's inside the building has had some cosmetic updates. But the outside, I think, is the same as it was when I came on. But I will throw out a topic here for a second.
I love surprise topics.
New target range.
Oh, we did write about this. This is very exciting.
This is so exciting. This is kind of on my bucket list for my career.
Uh-huh. What is the name of the building?
It's the old Hamilton County Target Range. They're going to call it the Hamilton County Safety Complex.
Yes. We got a press
Regional
release about
safety
it.
Complex,
I was like, they had a groundbreaking for it. And it's just like, you're like, okay. But what it really meant was moving the gun range to a more rural place and moving it out of a place where real people who live there every day, they don't have to hear it anymore. And I'm very excited.
Yeah, this is in my career again has been brought up many, many times, but just never really went anywhere. So I'm happy to say that the funding was raised and the agreements were met, and looks like in approximately spring of 26 we'll be at a new target range.
Yes, that's very important to things, and it did take a very long time to get done.
Yeah, but we got it.
So when you're talking about your career, I am by no means pushing you out the door. No means doing that. What does the future hold for you?
Yeah, so I love my job.
I know.
I absolutely love my job. I love coming to work every day. The people the men and women of CPD, sworn and civilian, make my life so easy. They really do. They work so hard. I don't think anybody realizes how hard they work every day. But that being said, right now, you know, it's really good. I have an amazing city council. I have an amazing city manager, an amazing mayor. All of them have done nothing but show me support in the years that I've been the chief, and support for the men and women of the department. So the climate right now, I'm going to be around a while.
Okay. So there's no sort of like deadlines like we saw with Chief Isaac?
No.
Like some sort of retirement deadlines? Because we've seen that in the past. There's nothing like
right.
that.
Yeah, okay. No deadline.
All right, then I know you're not going anywhere.
All right. Well, should we let the chief get back
we
to
should.
Work?
We should. I think she probably has work to do.
Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
And your frankness on some tough topics. Yeah. I can't believe you've been officially the chief for 2 years. It seems like that went fast.
It does go fast. I feel like my 34-year career has gone really fast. Really fast.
All right. Well, thank you, chief.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate your time.
It was nice to take a pause from the election to talk about what the elections really mean. Like, so much of the election was like, who do you think is going to be handle crime better and have better ideas and policies? Really, at every level, that kind of comes into the equation and what you think of them. But here is the chief doing the work on the ground. And so it's always good to talk to her.
And I admire someone who advocates for their team. Yeah. She is a tremendous supporter of the officers and understands, because she's been one, how tough the job is.
I know. It really resonated.
How thankless it can be at some times. Yeah. She's a great guest.
They're not babysitters. That line resonated with me.
100%. All right. Should we talk about something that's very, that's so Cincinnati?
You know, it happened right after we last recorded. So
yes.
We like to be timely. but it was... Go ahead. You talk about it.
All right.
Let me set it up.
And this is going to end up sounding so whiny, but that's so Cincinnati too.
Absolutely.
So I had a very serious fire that broke out underneath the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge. And as everyone knows now, if you try to get back and forth across the river, especially either going to the airport or trying to get to Newport, that has messed up your life big time. The southbound lanes are closed. There is still no official cause to the fire. We know that it burned a lot of wood and synthetic material that was under the ramp as part of the riverfront park that is there. So here we go. Those lanes are shut. No timetable for when they're going to open. And it has caused all kinds of havoc downtown Cincinnati, on the other bridges, especially on 75, trying to get across the Brent Spence Bridge. It's real. Like, it is not easy to get across the river right now.
No, it is. And these bridges, it just shows them how important they are. And having the Brent Spence Bridge, Companion Bridge, built before anything serious happened to the Brent Spence Bridge. I mean, it just wasn't keeping up with the traffic is one of the things. It's not necessarily out of its lifespan. It just, for safety purposes, it really was, it's not keeping up with the traffic, and we needed another one. And we can't go without one of these bridges. It would be impossible, especially the Brent Spence.
So obviously we have other bridges. Some of them require...
And a ferry.
The Anderson Ferry, if you're going to go all the way down to your part of town, mm-hmm. you know, and pop over into Delhi. But here's how it's affecting my life.
Do tell.
All right. And here's the whiny part. And a question I'm going to pose to our listeners. If you travel south on 75 with some regularity, you know that as you approach downtown... To continue on 75, you have to be in the right two lanes. Those are the lanes that take you across the bridge. And on good days, even when 471, the Big Mac Bridge, the Beard Bridge is open, traffic slows down. And people don't want to wait in line. So they stay in the left lanes, which are really the exit lanes for 2nd Street, Fort Washington Way. Those aren't meant to be travel lanes at those points. You're supposed to be getting in those lanes to exit. But what people do, because now that traffic is backed up even more trying to get across the Brent Spence Bridge, the traffic slows down and people are lined up to get across the bridge as far back sometimes as the 74 Exchange, or even go farther up north to the Western Hills Viaduct, which, by the way, there's not a sign that says Western Hills Viaduct. Everybody just knows what that is.
That's true.
That's so Cincinnati, too. So here's the question. People, and I don't blame them, they don't want to stop in traffic and wait in those two lanes. So they stay in the left lanes and they ride it out to the last minute, hoping, fingers crossed, praying that someone's not paying attention and they can cut in front of them, or that a good Samaritan lets them over. Well, that's not happening right now because there's trucks there. People are bumper to bumper. And so what happens is these drivers stop. They stop in the left lanes, put their blinker on, and now all of a sudden you have a parking lot in one of the most dangerous interchanges, you know, in our immediate freeway system here. I wonder, is that legal? Are you allowed to just stop on a highway lane and put your signal on? Or at that point, do you just have to cut your losses and say, you know what? I ain't getting over. I'm going to have to keep going, turn around and try again.
So I have to tell you, though, think about what you would have to do if you kept going. Like, there is no point to get off. Then at that point, you have to go to the west side on 50, or you'd have to swing around the city and get off at Ezra Charles. There's no easy way to turn around.
Or you could get off 2nd Street. There's that little, you know, kind of goes under and you end up on 2nd Street. There's Phil.
You'd have to go into downtown.
Yes, you would have to come down 2nd Street, cut over on Rosa Parks, and maybe go across.
Which I have to say, when it's backed up, that's what I do.
Because
it's easy to cut through downtown to get
to go. That's happening now because people are trying to get across the river. But that's my That's So Cincinnati moment that I would like to share, is sitting there watching drivers who make poor choices and wrecking it for the rest of us. That feels so Cincinnati to me.
I will. And I will tell you, secondary to guessing who was going to win the elections and everything is, like, city people, everyone theorizing about what caused the fire. Like, and I will not spread rumors there. Like, the engineer thing's pretty true. It's something. I just don't have the nuances of it. I will not. The rumors are rampant about what caused that fire. I will not repeat them because that would be irresponsible.
Well, we do have our standards.
We do. And watch for the Cincinnati.com. We'll eventually actually the real reporting on it.
We are checking in every day with those who are investigating the cause of the fire. We even have a cool little story today about the robot that's being used. So construction workers don't have to put themselves in harm's way. That's a pretty cool.
This is never true about me. I've only read national news, bro.
Oh my gosh. You got to read about the dog robot that's helping.
I will do that tonight.
All right. Well, should we wrap this up?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of That's So Cincinnati, a podcast produced by The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer for new subscribers. I'm on your side when times get rough and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over troubled water.
Thanks again, you guys. See you next week.